Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun, a Sopranos podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. We're very excited for all of you joining us again for another great episode. Just reminding you once again to give us 5 stars and a review on all of the, you know, podcast stores and shit. Please do that. We recently got one from someone whose username was Gramps, and he gave us 4 stars because he said he loved the podcast, but he does not agree with our politics, which I thought was fair enough.
That's good.
I don't expect a Gramps to enjoy our politics.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, as long as he's listening, that's cool. We need a few Gary from Fremonts every now and then just to fill out the listener roles.
Hey, this is Gary from Fremont. I just want to say that I love all the jokes about sucking your own dick on the Sopranos podcast, but I do not think that socialism is good. Goodbye.
Yeah, it's a big tent.
Yeah, it's a big tent. We're a big tent podcast. So, yeah, give us the 5 stars in a review. Also, you know, just reminding you, patreon.com/frotcast, the $8 tier is Pod Yourself a shout out. And at the end of the episode, we're going to give some of y'all some mafia nicknames. So be excited for that. Who doesn't want to hear their name on the world's only Sopranos podcast? So
it's a great honor.
It is a great honor. And you guys will enjoy it. All right. Now that we've got all of that out of the way, today, Vince and I, we're going to be talking about season 5, episode 5 of The Sopranos, Irregular, Around the Margins. Mm. And our guest today, you know him, you love him, from the Pardon My Take podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, PFT is here.
What's up, guys? Long time listener. First time Zoomer.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you figure out how to get the Zoom to work. You look good. You sound good. I'm very excited for you being on this episode.
Listen, I'm pumped up about this. I honestly have. I've been listening. I listened to the Frotcast way back in the day. Vince and I go way back.
That's right.
Vince and I shared a healthy meal at the House of Prime Rib one time, where he taught me about second slices. And now I'm just a second slice guy. It doesn't matter what restaurant I'm at. I could be like at a Subway and I'll be like, do I get second slices with that? It'll change your life.
Yeah. Wait, what's, I don't know about second slices.
Oh, dude, well, he impressed us big time. We went to the House of Prime Rib and we had heard rumor that at House of Prime Rib in San Francisco, you know, you can get a big ass slice of prime rib, which, you know, will just eating the normal amount will give you the meat sweats. Like, I've never not woken up in the middle of the night after eating House of Prime Rib. But you can also, mm-hmm. if you're still hungry, order a second slice. I don't think any of us had ever actually done it before, but
do you get like
PFT made it happen, and we were all very impressed.
Is it a free slice? Is it like a code where you like say you second slice and they're like, fuck, and they have to give you another one?
I mean, kind of.
I think if you say it with enough confidence, they'll give it to you. If you're like, do you guys do the second slice here? Then they're like, okay, this guy doesn't know about second slices. Let's try to
for it. This guy's never heard of second slice, so he doesn't know he gets it for free, so fuck him. Yeah,
you got to make eye contact. You got to get a little bass in your voice. Otherwise, they're like, this guy can't handle it.
Well, that's amazing. I didn't know you could do that. And I'm going to try that next time I'm at the House of Prime Rib in San Francisco. But PFT, tell me, this is a Sopranos podcast. Do you like The Sopranos?
I love The Sopranos. I just recently started rewatching it and it's better the second time through. And one of my favorite things to do on Part of My Take is, well, our producer Hank started watching The Sopranos a couple years ago. So every now and again, like, I don't know, once every couple months, we'll just throw in a random Sopranos spoiler for him on an episode that we know that he hasn't watched yet, to the point where we made him stop watching the show halfway through. But yeah, it's actually liberating to be on a show like this where I can say, like, hey, you remember when Bobby Balaclava got shot in the middle of the train store and then Tony killed Christopher because he was a drug addict?
Yeah.
And not feel like the pressure of anybody being like, hey, PFT, why are you ruining this entire show for us that came out 20 years ago? So yeah. It's good to be able to have that freedom on this show. I don't know how you guys feel about spoilers, but it's something else when somebody accuses you of dropping spoilers on a show that came out like over a dozen years ago.
I feel far more strongly about people telling me not to spoil stuff than I do about spoilers. I mean, my position is that spoilers like aren't really real. Like, you can't there's only so much. There's some movies where I want people to go in cold or whatever, but for the most part, and especially for the fucking Sopranos, which is A, very old, and B, not spoilable. Like, knowing a plot point in The Sopranos does nothing to your enjoyment of the show of it, in my
opinion. Yeah, it's kind of being like watching, you know, oh, I'm watching Seinfeld for the first time. No spoilers. It's like there's nothing to, you're still going to really like Seinfeld, chances are, even if you know that they all get arrested in the end.
Like, you don't have to know what the treat at the bottom of the box is to enjoy the cereal, because, like, you're not really, if you're looking for the treat, you fucked up to begin with.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. I love that. The treat is, there's a treat in every single episode. You can definitely start each episode of The Sopranos cold, watch it all the way through, and still really enjoy it. Like, last night, I jumped into watching this episode, and I skipped ahead a little bit from where I was. And I was actually like kind of blown away, because you forget how good the acting becomes with James Gandolfini and Edie Falco screaming at each other. It's like, oh yeah, this, I remember just how great this this series got.
Yeah, I mean, so like when you watched it, you'd seen it before. So when you say you jumped ahead, you already knew, you know, all the spoilers, because you had them spoiled by watching them. Is watching something that's not a spoiler?
Yeah, no, I self-spoiled. Yeah, I watched it all the way through to the end. I was a real asshole to myself.
Jesus does not like it when you self-spoil. You are going to have to go to your priest after that.
Go to confession. So when you watched it the first time, did you see it like as it came out, or did you discover it kind of like later on?
It was like it was a little bit after the fact. So I caught up. When I watched it, I started watching like season 3, season 4, maybe.
Yeah.
And then I went back and I watched the first couple of seasons to kind of like fill in the gaps as I was watching the later ones. So I watched it like totally out of sync. Probably not the way that it was intended to be seen for the first time. But like, it's like you said, it really doesn't matter. It's a good enough show where each episode stands on its own.
Yeah, yeah. No,
show
that
about
is
buddies. It's like every show that comes out on HBO, it's Entourage, but for a different demographics. Right. So it's just Entourage for Italians.
Yeah.
There's Italian Entourage. There's sports Entourage. There's medieval Entourage.
Insecure is Black Entourage.
That's right.
Dragon Entourage. Yeah, you can go medieval or dragon Entourage. Either one works.
Yeah, and then there's Real Sex, which is...
there's Lena Dunham Entourage.
Oh, that's girls, yeah.
There's another one that nobody's watching, which is funny.
There's another Lena Dunham show?
Yeah, she made... Well, I think she's like an executive producer or something. It was like called Generation... Well, it's Generation, but the T is a plus for some reason.
Oh, I've seen the fucking logo for that.
I watched the first one. It's about like a flamboyant water polo guy. He's like a gay... Mean Girl, kind of. I don't know. I wasn't really into it.
I would watch a show where it just tracks down all of her old dogs and just like true life. I'm an ex Lena Dunham dog.
right.
Just see how they're doing these days. I miss those guys.
You know how A24 they just put out a trailer for their next one, which is just called Lamb. And I keep wanting it to put a Y on the end for Lammy, because that was Lena Dunham's dog's name, and have it be like a, you know, like a prestige thriller about searching for Lammy, or Lammy comes back from the dead and haunts someone. I don't know. You got to workshop it, but it's the idea is there.
I will not sit here and watch Lena Dunham's Good Name and Good Dog Names be denigrated. And I only say that because she followed me on Twitter a few months ago, and I don't know why. But I'm just gonna
like I've met her in person. She interviewed me in like 2007.
I know she interviewed you.
Yeah, that's how long ago it was.
That's I mean, at this point, the fact that she has never once asked to be on either the Frotcast or Pod Yourself a Gun. Just
I think
I don't understand
her,
it.
But then I like it, and she always responded and was like, you know, she never said like gave me a hard no or anything. But at a certain point, I was like, okay, she's way too big time for us, and I appreciate that.
Just invite her on to the one where Christopher kills Cosette.
we have to go back to that one.
She's watching it.
Honestly, like I'll sell out too. Like, yeah, Lena, if you follow me on Twitter, I will just do nothing but be a major. I'll be a Dunham simp.
I'm literally that. That's all it takes for me to like you.
I do defend her still. I mean, Girls was great, and I will not hear a word against it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I appreciate Girls because of Adam Driver made my look into like a sex thing.
I'm kind of pissed off that Post Malone did the same thing for me. Like he got hot all of a sudden, and now it's like, come on, dude, trashy. Go back to your trashy roots.
Exactly.
I don't know who that is for me, but I'll find out some. Maybe like Luke Walton,
Fred Durst. Yeah, it could be. But this is not a. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Did you guys see Fred Durst's new glow up? This is. I mean, I don't want to interrupt, but this is definitely worth an interruption.
Yes.
Fred Durst is. I mean, holy shit! He looks like a librarian now. And he's playing just down the street in like a week and a half from me. I think I have to go see Limp Bizkit live now.
Yeah,
do they have the same lineup? Is that original lineup?
I don't think that Wes is involved. If I remember, I don't know. It's honestly, it's been a long time since I've looked up the lineup for
the
Limp
band
Bizkit.
Members for Limp Bizkit.
But my guess is Wes Borland and his like the monkey suit and the contacts aren't still around. I hope John Otto is still there.
Mm-hmm.
And then whoever the guy is that plays, who's a bass player? I don't know.
Middle finger guy. I don't know. AJ Soprano would know.
AJ
would know. But yeah, I'm looking at this picture of Fred Durst right now, and I mean he deleted
all of his previous Instagram pictures and just posted the one where he has the bleached white Hogan, and I don't understand what the look he's going for is or why he even did it. I have like part of me is like, does it have something to do with the Woodstock 99 documentary going after him so hard?
Gotta be. I also think that like if you are a public figure, you have to have a certain amount of. You have to stay relevant enough so that people take pictures of you every now and then, just so that like 20 years later, people aren't like, oh my God, he looks so different. And,
you have to be like,
I fucking aged 20 years. What do you want from me?
He just kind of looks like Jimmy Carter. And he's in some sort of like biopic of the J-Man.
He's doing a little bit like his face looks like I no longer break stuff.
Uh-huh.
And like he's almost like gotten into wellness a little bit. Like he's found peace and he doesn't have any more negativity to get out through the act of breaking stuff.
Now when I break stuff, it's only on demo day when I'm flipping houses.
Yeah. But this is not a Fred Durst, Lena Dunham's Dog podcast. No, this is a Sopranos podcast, and we cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song. Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen and everyone, today we are talking about from season 5 of The Sopranos, episode 5, Irregular Around the Margins. This episode premiered April 4th, 2004. Vince, break us off a little piece of that synopsis.
That's right. A car crash puts Tony and Adriana in a compromising position, and Cousin Tony tries to keep Chris from getting the wrong impression and the wrong information.
Yes, yes. And what was happening at the time that this episode premiered, Vince?
That's right. We cannot evaluate art without its cultural context, of course. And for that, we go to the Remember When machine.
Walk, walk. Daddy, daddy, mama, shoo, walk. Remember then, then.
Remember.
Remember when is the lowest form of conversation.
Ah, yes. Well, the Remember When machine today is taking us all the way back to April 4th, 2004. A Pennsylvania mom stripped at her teenage son's birthday party. Patricia Johnson, 35, of Mercer, Pennsylvania, provided the naughty entertainment after plans to ride go-karts fizzled.
Well, okay, hold on. How old was the kid?
16, apparently.
Oh, fuck. Okay. Damn. Uh-huh.
Cops say Johnson also bought beer for the kids and licked their
cops?
Faces.
They called the cops on her? Who called the cops on her?
Some snitch.
One of the 16-year-old snitches? Fucking, I wonder if it was her son.
I think it was at a hotel, and it was probably just the hotel security or something.
Is there a private room, though? How would they know?
I don't know. Maybe they were being loud. Stripping is loud.
Oh, fuck, my mom is naked. Just everyone in the hotel. There are underage children in here. This is awesome.
Cops say Johnson also bought beer for the kids and licked their faces during the striptease act. She was sentenced to 3 to 15 months in jail in connection with the boozy bash.
What? Where in Pennsylvania was this?
Mercer, right near the Ohio border, wherever that is.
Fuck. That is, that's an insane story. She stripped, but like she got completely naked for his 16-year-old friends.
Johnson then bought the boys beer and rented a hotel room where she stripped and engaged in other inappropriate behavior, authorities charged. But who knows?
Wow. I mean,
Johnson acknowledged allowing the boys to drink alcohol and participating in horseplay with them. She also said her behavior was atypical and fueled by pills and alcohol.
Well, obviously. But like horseplay could mean anything at this point. And I'm curious. I want to know some follow up on that story. If you could just bookmark that for later.
Yeah, I couldn't find more. That was about the long and short of it that I could find.
Well, I mean, that is what was happening in that time period that would drive these moms to strip in front of their kids.
You know, we were living in a post Woodstock 99 world at this point.
That's true.
You know, Fred Durst had already came and gone.
Yeah. 9/11 had happened. That came and went.
Yeah.
The Iraq War started and ended immediately, as we all remember. People were just feeling their freedom and decided to do, you know, child endangerment. Is it endangerment if she just gets naked? I get that it's endangerment.
I think it's
like,
just called entertainment.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. You know, yeah. I mean, is it? I mean, it sucks for the kid, but
sure.
His
that's,
friends.
That's child embarrassment.
That's child embarrassment, and that should be. Anyways,
it's child embarrassment and child engorgement, depending on which child. You know, it's in the eye of the child.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. I know it when I see it. Wow, you always find the weirdest fucking stories for the Remember When machine.
Movies, top movies in the country, Hellboy, Walking Tall, Scooby-Doo 2, Monsters Unleashed, and Home on the Range. Top pop song was still Burn by Usher. By Usher. The top rock song was Figured You Out by Nickelback still.
All right.
Yeah.
That was the Remember When machine. That was what was happening. We have now remembered when. We know what was going on at the time that this episode came out, and we're, I think, all the better for it. Let's get into this episode. Vince, you did you read the synopsis, and this is one of those cases in which I have to say, yeah, the synopsis pretty much That's correct. I mean, every other synopsis, it's like they miss all of the, you know, the B story, the C story, the D story. They just kind of like, you know, write a vague description of what happens in the episode. This is one of those episodes where kind of it's just one story the whole time.
Yeah.
And
the A story leads, and there is a couple like B and C stories in there, but they mostly they're ripple effects of the main story.
Yeah, which is why this week my Bada B story is as follows.
Tony, 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 please don't fuck Christopher's future wife. Tony.
Oh, it's Jolene. I get it now. Sorry.
All right, keep it going.
Tony, 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 Bada B story, Sopranos 505. Adriana and Tony crash at 2 in the morning. Now everybody thinks there's an affair. That's pretty much all the stories. And gobble-gool red sauce.
Yeah, that's it.
What a bitch. My name is L.A. No,
you
Mac.
Can,
flap,
you
flap,
can,
flap, 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 all up in that ass. With
how you pretend that the that freestyling is just something that you have to do. You have to get it out. Not
when
for
the recording is playing, I have to continue.
Okay, sure. You're like one of those like California Raisin things that you put in front of music and it dances. You're like that, but with freestyling.
I just want to say I love it. That was great.
Thank you. Thank you. I feel like our guests appreciate my art more than my co-hosts. And PFT, you're a mensch, and I love you for it. But yeah, that's the one storyline in this episode. It is the episode where Tony and Adriana are flirting and there's sexual tension and they get into a car wreck and then the fucking rumor mill starts going.
Is Jolene a song about rumors? Is that the deal?
No, it's just this. Listen, it's a song about someone who could take someone else's man.
Yeah.
And I was like, Tony could take Christopher's, you know, fiance easily.
Yeah.
But mostly it's just that, you know, I got to pump these out every week, dude.
I thought it was a perfect fit, actually. Like, if you go back to the meaning of Jolene,
yeah,
she's pretty much saying, like, she's tucking her tail between her legs and saying, yeah, like, I would prefer not to be cucked. I understand if you would like to go ahead and do that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the exact same mentality Christopher has. He's like, hey, Tony, I know you got to kick everything upstairs. I understand, you know, that sort of thing. But it'd be really nice if you didn't fuck my fiance, please.
Yeah, right. It's like, I get that you have to wet your beak, but I feel like there is, I don't know, a morality limit as to like where you can put the beak.
Oh, so that's the song is Dolly Parton singing to a girl named Jolene who she doesn't want to steal her man, even though she could. Okay, got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I knew that at some point and then forgot.
Yeah, I mean, those are I think, literally the lyrics. Please don't take him just because you can. You know, I didn't put as much thought into choosing the song
now that PFT explained it, like, it makes complete sense, and I'm glad that you did.
Well, the crazy part is Dolly Parton singing it, and I don't think that Dolly Parton would ever run into a situation where she was going to lose her man to somebody else with, like, bigger boobs than her.
I was just thinking that's what the song is about.
She's like very well prepared for that. Dolly Parton is, let's be real, probably the ideal American woman in my
absolutely
book. Like,
yeah,
top to bottom, everything about Dolly. I would drop everything right now and marry Dolly Parton today. She's probably what, like 80 years old?
Old as shit, but still very beautiful.
And she funded my vaccine, so good for her.
She funds vaccines. Her body is mostly like it's bones and collagen, but she's like fucking the most beautiful voice. She's one of the living legend singer-songwriters of our time.
Yeah, which it made no sense really that she was the one singing that song. I think you can only get away with singing that song and having it not sound pathetic if you are like the alpha female Right. Like Dolly Parton is. Like you, like if Tony sang the song that you just sung, everybody would probably like love it. But no dude is going to like bump a song that's written by very clearly a guy who's getting cucked. Yeah.
Dolly Parton is clearly singing to another version of herself in that song. Like she's singing the song,
right? She's Jolene. That's the twist. Another spoiler alert.
That's right.
You know how smart Dolly is? Is she sang that song because she knew that losers like us would listen to it and be like, "Oh, poor Dolly. I might have a chance with Dolly Parton now. She's getting her heart broken. She's not that different from me.
She's so sympathetic for some reason. I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to imagine the titties on Jolene that she would even be a threat. Like, I don't know what she could possibly look like.
There's other parts of a woman. Like, there's other things that a woman could have in terms of appeal.
Yeah, but let's be real. Like, if this is a threatening person, you have to at least a similar amount of titty, if not twice the size.
What I find attractive about Dolly Parton is all the good that she's done for Central Tennessee, and
absolutely,
and all the literacy that she's promoted. She mails a book to every kid that's in first grade in the city of Atlanta every year. I think she's that's the part of Dolly that I'm attracted. Maybe if she had written this song and like it's about another woman, it's about Melinda Gates,
yes,
who came up with a better vaccine than Dolly. I can see that.
Yeah, she wrote it about Sheryl Sandberg, like just at all the important things she's done for girl bosses everywhere.
Yeah.
lean in. But yeah, you know, Tony is basically Jolene in this episode. Mm-hmm. Easily able to take Chrissy's fiance Adriana, and Adriana seems down with it.
It's actually Giulini. They'd spell it G-I-U.
The Italian version.
It's just Giuliani. But, that's the
yeah.
Italian,
you're just
it's the Italian Giuliani.
Rudy.
Yeah, Rudy. Yeah, so this episode is about the rumor mill. I see we have an alternate title here, just Rumors, which...
Van Morrison album.
Yeah, or I was thinking like the Fleetwood Mac album.
Oh, that's what I meant, yeah. I get those two confused because they have two words in the title, and I'm really
that's
dumb
true.
Like that. Also, they're both like words that don't mean anything to me.
Fair,
but anyway, yeah, it's like the closest thing that I think The Sopranos has had so far, maybe other than the Columbus Day episode. But this is very much like a very special episode about the dangers of gossip.
Yeah, kind of like the Columbus Day episode. It's an episode that kind of just like plays on one premise or one theme throughout the whole thing, and everything kind of coalesces around that. This is like, it's a very linear episode, and it's also one of the most memorable, in my opinion.
Yeah, I also think it speaks to like something deep about the mafia, which is that basically gossip is your entire life. Like you literally live and die based on gossip, because if you got too many people gossiping that you're a snitch, you might get shot. You know,
if everyone thinks you're gay, you know, you might get shot.
That's right. There's a lot of ways to get shot. I mean, I guess it's sort of like the stock market, where, you know, whatever everybody says is valuable, is
right.
And whatever they say isn't, same deal. So
I also thought it was interesting when I was watching this, because I've been talking a lot recently about the McDonald's theory of how two nations have never gone to war with each other if they both have McDonald's.
Yeah.
Really?
Like some old economic theory. It's probably bullshit.
That's
by now.
Thomas Friedman. I think either Thomas Friedman invented that or he popularized it. And it's like the perfect kind of Tom Friedman, like pseudoscience.
Yeah. It is. It's pseudoscience, but like, it basically just means if countries are buying and selling stuff to each other, they probably won't have a war. Mm-hmm. We actually went back in time and looked at it, and we saw that Saddam Hussein applied to get a McDonald's franchise in Iraq back in like the late 90s. And he was denied some corporate bullshit, red tape.
Yeah.
They denied his application.
As he was walking up to the gallows, he's like, how is the application? Have they said yes yet?
Yeah.
But it was like the, somebody told me that it was like the, like if Hitler had just been allowed to continue painting, who would have known what would have happened?
Right.
If Saddam had gotten his McDonald's, we might not have gone to war with him the second time. But I actually think that The Sopranos, in a weird way, kind of like disproves that theory, because these guys all have their own McDonald's. They have, you know, their strip clubs and they're like construction no-show jobs, but they just use that as a means to go to war with each other. And the rumor mill in this one, it's very funny because like it shows almost in like a cartoonish way how the rumor starts to get like exaggerated. And occasionally The Sopranos would do something like that, where it's something that's obviously like tossed in as comedic relief or for a comedic effect. It's like an old comedy trope,
right?
But they nestle it in the middle of like a giant drama so well that I don't know, it doesn't make it seem that cartoonish, and it fits in with the tone of the thing. But then you get like, you know, once they find out about when certain people start finding out about the alleged affair and stuff, it becomes like a means to go to war, like even more with each other.
Right. Over,
kind of disproving the McDonald's theory. But I just thought it was an interesting note how they do that. Like, I don't know what the device is. I'm not smart enough to understand the technique and how they write the episode to make something that's funny also serious at the same time. It's like a little vignette of comedy. Well, I don't know what I'm trying to describe.
It's like, well, they put slapstick in the midst of, you know, life and death things. It's like when Paulie is trying to kill Mikey Palmese, and he starts getting he gets caught in like the poison oak, which it is funny and like a sitcom thing, but it is also like a believable thing that could happen while you're trying to kill a guy.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's what makes this the funniest show ever is the fact that, like, you know, like the contrast between recognizable like suburban family stakes, you know, or suburban family problems mixed with mafia stakes, like that's funny already. But the fact that they make the family drama, the suburban drama, so real, like that, it just makes it all the more funny. Like you said, like being caught up in a bunch of poison ivy, and then just using that as fuel to shoot Mikey Palmese harder, because like he just he just goes, motherfucker, like he's more like before he was going to kill him anyways, but now he's more mad.
Well, it's just one of those days now. Like, it's just one of those days where everything's fucked.
Just one of those days.
That's right.
It was just one of those days when Christopher pulls up on Tony's truck when he's absolutely hammered later on in this episode. He just wanted to break stuff. He just wanted to
like,
get some of that aggression out. And
By
the way, Tony's truck was at the Chevrolet, the old school Chevy, was at the Suburban.
Yeah.
I completely forgotten how square that truck was, that SUV is. That was like the Volvo station wagon of SUV. That was like mid-2000s giant SUV, 13 miles per gallon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just a big cube, like a big long cube.
Yeah. Easily tippable cube.
I really in that moment where Chrissy's shooting up the car, and I had to count the gunshots because I was curious for some reason.
But he
shoots nine times and starts clicking. He's like, motherfucking gun!
Yeah. I have a clip of that.
Motherfucker!
As I've noted before, like I feel like the art of sound design has really degraded since The Sopranos, because you listen to clips from The Sopranos and you know, like, each individual sound has a purpose for being there in the soundscape. Like, it's not like now it's just this wall of too many things at the same time, and it turns into mush, and you can't understand the dialogue half the time. But
when
this was made, like, every single bullet hit something, and you could tell what it was just in that clip. Like, it was all there for a reason. And
I've also noticed in The Sopranos, they, to their credit, they don't do what every other show or movie ever does, which is anytime a character has a gun and they like move it just through the air, it makes a clicking sound. I don't know what the fuck that is in every movie. Yeah. Whenever you just like are holding a gun and you rotate your body, or the gun is put on a table, like it sounds like they're reloading the fucking ammunition in it. I don't know who the sound designers are that do that, but The Sopranos, I don't think they ever do that. Like guns are extremely silent. And actually, like for whatever reason, The Sopranos, guns aren't that scary in this show. Like people just pull them out all the time and they don't make any noises. Like, I'm not afraid of that gun.
Yeah, it's, I feel like there's a pretentious sound designer somewhere who has an explanation for that, where he's like, yeah, I really wanted the gun to be like a snake in this, you know? It's kind of like, it's menacing, it's the forbidden fruit, like it sort of rattles before it kills you.
Guns, actually, it's a character in the story.
Right.
So I wanted to give it, that's its dialogue.
Yeah. Exactly. I wanted the gun to be like another character.
I love it's in the script. It just says gun. Gun shakes like maraca every time it is held. I love this scene.
I do that too.
Yeah, you do. You shake like maraca. But let's start with the, let's get into the opening scene real quick. We start off in this episode with Meadow is walking through the Crazy Horse Club, which is a club that Adriana owns, quote unquote, and Tony shows up fucking coked out of his mind. Like he's just done coke in the bathroom and is like wiping his nose in front of his daughter.
Tad.
Hey.
What are you doing here?
I got an office here. Come down with Finn.
And some people.
Promise me no drinking and driving.
Who's your designated driver?
I'm not the one with all the attention in your car. All right, have fun, huh? Need some money? Have a good time, sweetheart. Be careful.
I like that scene so much because it's perfect. Tony's clearly in a situation where like less talk, better, but he's also just done coke, so he can't help himself.
Right, yeah. He's got like five or six like what would be ending phrases for your kid going off to play soccer, you know? Just, you know, be careful out there. Have fun with your friends. He's coked out of his mind, so he keeps trying to sound like a suburban dad who's like watching his kid get driven to softball. But that's clearly not what's going on. She is
more is more when you're on coke.
It's true.
Yeah, it's like you realize that you said something dumb, and then, well, I got to put on an extra. Whatever I say next will get me out of this jam. Oh, shit, I just made it worse. Okay, now I really got to get my way out of both those jams, and you just end up going into a darker and darker pit.
Yeah, pretty soon you're talking about the T-shirt company that you're going to start and, like, your restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you pull out your fucking screenplay, and you're just like, this is going to change the way movies are made.
I don't understand why Tony didn't use like the private restroom at the Crazy Horse. Like Tony's waiting in line like a chump. He's like standing outside of the stall, knocking on it. Like, hey, you about done in there? Like, does he not have his own coke room to go to?
I thought he was coming out of the office, and the office door just happened to be near the restrooms, but that could be complete projection on my part.
Yeah, I thought he was coming out of the bathroom. That's how I saw it. But it's possible he came. I just don't know why he would leave that room having just done coke. You know what I mean? Like he had the look of someone who like tooted up real quick in the bathroom and then walked out.
Well, he's also at his own club, basically, so he can essentially do whatever the fuck he wants there.
Yeah. And I'd be more mad at Meadow for being there,
right?
And not knowing, you know, like, yo, this is
How are you? And is this was this set in the summer? Because like, why the fuck are her and Finn, who are going to Columbia at a North Jersey shitty rock club? Maybe the band was just so hot they couldn't help but see like the Chesterfield Four or whatever the fuck that band was.
Yeah, which is strange because like that's a band from like what, the late 60s, and I assume that the band that was playing was doing a cover of that song, but it doesn't really matter. The point is they wanted to go for a night of you know, just like trashy music in the middle of Jersey, and so Tony gets caught, and immediately following that scene, you've got Aide continuing to snitch about Tony to the FBI, and you see the beginning of Adriana's IBS, which I think is like a really, again, it's like the perfect realistic problem that you would see on like any either like sitcom or like TV show that's not about the mafia, where she's clearly like her stress is causing her bowels to be irritable, and I don't know, I relate
to, yeah, very relatable, yeah. To me, I used to have to shit every time I did comedy, like before I would do comedy I would shit,
yeah,
you know, you got nervous bowels.
It's also, it's great how she starts drinking White Russians as her like only means of treating it. She's like, she can't go too far from a toilet, so is she gonna like try to change anything about her life or go to therapy or
no,
she's gonna switch up entirely to White Russians. Like if you get diagnosed with lung cancer, you're like, you know what, American spirit's only for me from now
on.
Time to make a change.
Well, and she's still doing coke because she's like, look, if the problem causing my IBS is stress, I gotta de-stress a little bit with this cocaine.
I know, it's a horrible vicious cycle there. Like she's just like, maybe, why am I shitting myself all the time? It's because I'm stressed. I better do this fucking the stimulant cut with baby laxative.
Right.
Well, she's also stressed about the Middle East. She made that very clear in this episode.
Yeah, in one of my favorite Chris Moltisanti aid Adriana scenes, Aide is talking to Chris about her IBS and explaining exactly what it is to him and then why she's feeling that way. And I have a clip of that.
Irritable bowel syndrome?
He'll know more when the tests come back. I still got to bring him a stool sample.
Jesus, please.
You wouldn't want to yell at me to go to the doctor.
I got to know every detail?
I could be really sick, Christopher.
And my Aunt Josephine had colon cancer. A whole asshole rotted out.
I may have to go into therapy. Plus, they may put me on Prozac.
A diarrhea?
To help me cope and handle stress, which is a lot of what causes it.
What do you gotta be stressed about? That bar?
War, Christopher? Middle East?
You don't listen to the president? We're going to mop the floor with the whole fucking world. The whole world's going to be under our control. So what are you worked up about?
I like that Christopher, even sober, is just a mixtape of shitty boyfriend things. Like all of the things that you know not to say when you're in an argument with your girlfriend, which is that, you know, her problems are not important.
Right. She has nothing to be stressed about.
You're grossed out about any of her illnesses.
And then making her feel worse, like, oh, yeah, you know, my aunt died of colon cancer. Her whole asshole rotted out. Like, telling this to a person who's already stressed and has IBS is like, yeah, you know, that's how Chrissy rolls.
If there's one thing women love to hear, it's like, your job is easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your job is easy. Calm down. Don't tell me about your health problems.
I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
You're being hysterical. It's wild. And then also like just like wrapping up that whole thing in a bow of just that cocky American spirit where we were so certain that we were just going to take over the Middle East. They're like, we'll go in there, we'll kill a few guys, we'll put some McDonald's in there,
we gotta
finally
knock a few heads and then it's gonna be all right, they'll know not to fuck around anymore.
Yeah, it is that, like, that level of confidence in the president was very real thing.
You see Iraq, you see Afghanistan, and you ask, hey, what if I go over there and knock your two heads together, how about that?
I like that it's just Three Stooges style. Well, he's like, I'm gonna poke his two eyes and he better hope he doesn't do the thing where he puts his hand right in front of his face, because I swear to God. But yeah, this is I mean, you really see even sober Chris is just a total piece of shit to Adriana, so
it might make him even more of a piece of shit.
Right. Well, because he's like he's like super bitter and resentful that he does like that he has to deal with other people like drinking and doing drugs and whatnot. And so it just makes him. Yeah, just he's so much worse than he was before.
No, I think Vince is right. It makes him a much bigger piece of shit. Like he walks in and stone cold sober, he just like starts slapping Adriana around. Like it's kind of weird to see that he actually acts worse when he's sober than he is when he's drinking. It's like, okay, I miss when he started, when he pulled the vodka out of the fridge and started chugging it. I was like, all right, maybe this will mellow him out a little bit. This will probably be good. And he kind of did to a certain extent. Like he did solve his problems in the end. Like they came to a good conclusion after he got hammered and went and shot up his boss's car. Like I think that it's probably emotionally healthy for Christopher to be drinking.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was his way of saying, when you did X, it made me feel Y. And the way that you do that in the mafia is that you go shoot his car up.
Yes. Guys, we don't express our feelings and emotions enough as men. And the best way to do that is to just get fucking loaded.
Yeah. So in this episode, also, we have not only Adriana's IBS, but we have Tony getting like some skin cancer removed from his forehead. And they bond about that. Like Tony and Aide are like talking about like, oh, I've got IBS. And, you know, he's like, I've got skin cancer. Don't tell anyone. And it kind of like it turns into like their little secret. So you can kind of feel
they're both bonding over very tangential experiences with cancer. It's kind of like when two dudes like wearing tactical clothing share stories about how they almost joined the military.
Fought in the war.
Yeah.
Oh, I was so close, dude. Yeah. I was so close to fighting in Iraq.
I almost enlisted. It was crazy.
Dude, they're so lucky.
It goes to show you how guys will just use anything about their personal lives as a cudgel to hit on a woman.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I got cancer. You know, I noticed that you had a medical issue.
Yeah.
I'm also dealing with, you know, I got some stuff going on. I had to get an STD test. I have a deviated septum. So I really understand the whole orifice thing that you got going on right now.
Yeah. I mean, like, you can see the sexual tension building up between the two as they're like, you know, talking about their fucking, you know, their respective illnesses. And then Adriana is also like, she's being a little forward, just basically being like, I wish my dad was like you, which like for anyone, you know, whether or not you're a mafioso, if someone said, I wish my dad was like you, I feel like, I don't know. There's something hot about that. I kind of get it, even though it's wrong. All right, fellas, I get that it's wrong.
No,
but
she's saying, I want you to be my daddy.
Right. I want you to be my daddy is, and you know, that's hot. I don't know. I understood it
as Melfi says, that is incest by proxy.
That's right. That's right.
Guys hear sentences from women that they're hitting on, and it's like a checklist. Like, am I out of it yet? No, I'm not out of it yet. She says, like, you'd be a great dad. You have to pause on that one. Be like, am I out of it? No, I think I can still spin that into her liking me still.
Yeah.
So not out of that one just yet.
Exactly. If a woman is just continuing to talk to you, then you're like, oh, she wants to fuck. Like that's just how we go. And just like, uh-huh, yeah, best friends, yeah, I know what that means. A mentor, fuck yeah, dude, a mentor that pussy. Like, well, if we're attracted to a girl, we just kind of keep going for it. But
as humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
They almost get into it, like they almost hook up in this moment where they're like playing darts together, and you know, he's like, he's touching her midsection. She drops a dart, and there's that moment where she's like goes down on her knees to like get the dart, and this is one of the more like horny episodes of The Sopranos I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, you're like, is she thinking about blowing him in that moment? Because usually, you know, like we start with a kiss or something. In my experience.
Right. And they almost do it, too.
I'm not a mafia boss, so.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, it's, but you are Italian, so you can relate on that level. Like, maybe that's what how it starts. Some people don't kiss first. They go directly to sucking dick. But anyways, they almost kiss, and then Philly Leotardo comes in and breaks up the party. And that is when Tony finally decides to go back to therapy. And in this episode, we have some of my favorite Melfi shit. What do you think, Vince?
I agree. You know, I'm on the record. I often don't like, I especially don't like therapy like in normal shows. And even in The Sopranos, they're oftentimes some of my least favorite scenes.
Sure.
This episode, very solid on the therapy because, I don't know, it's like they're going back and forth and it's not really they're trying to delve into his subconscious so much as just, you know, it sort of hammers home the type of people that they both are.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if The Sopranos came out right now, the takes that we would get from people being like, this shows the pussification of America. Even our mob bosses are going to therapy and talking about mental health. Yeah. This Tony Soprano thinks he's Simone Biles. There would be just like ridiculous, ridiculous takes coming about how this, even our mob shows are showing that like, we're not tough as we used to be. This isn't like John Wayne's mafia.
This is victim culture gone amok. And I feel like there's also would be the takes about like people objecting to Adriana potentially being attracted to Tony.
I
think this
yeah.
show is ahead of its game where they sort of shout out that, you know, that reticence that people would have by the scene where the mob, where the FBI people are making fun of her for being attracted to him.
Right. Yeah. And the guy's like, you know, she, a girl like that wants to be with Barney Rubble. And I had to think about that for a second. I was like, wait, Tony is Barney Rubble to you? Like that's one of many reasons I hate the FBI. They can't be honest about the fact that Tony is fuckable.
Right.
You know? Like, let's be real. Like, fucking Barney Rubble is a poor attempt at trying to fucking dunk on Tony Soprano. He's definitely Fred Flintstone. Mm-hmm. And the idea that, like, somehow he is, like, this, like, bumbling fool. It's like, nah, dude.
And Wilma was hot, and there's a reason for that.
Yeah, Wilma's fucking hella hot. And there's a reason that they fucking, you know, they got all them kids, too, because he fucks good.
Uh-huh. Well, am I the only one that thought that Barney was just cute as a button? Barney was, he was like a little, like a...
He was cute.
Yeah, he was, I liked his, I was more attracted to, was it Betty?
Oh yeah, Betty is really hot too.
I thought
yeah.
Betty was more of a dish than Wilma.
I feel like Barney is more of a himbo, and that's why it doesn't work. Because you know,
yeah, he's not alpha either. You know, like Barney is like he's the beta male in the you know Barney v Fred dichotomy. You know what I mean? So it's like you've got this. If you had a choice, which one is Tony Soprano in the Flintstones? You know.
Barney's got like a Cato Kaelin vibe. Like obviously he's an attractive guy, but he is not like the power. He's not the lead dog in that situation. Like Tony's the OJ.
Tony's the OJ. Okay. Yeah. It's like where Cato Kaelin.
No, but Barney's an awesome wingman. Like, there's no better fixer or cleanup guy that you would rather have than, like, if you get arrested in the middle of the night out of any cartoon character, I think I'm calling Barney Rubble.
Yeah, he's getting that 3 a.m. phone call for sure.
Yeah, but, like, to me, that if that's the case, Barney Rubble is Paulie Walnuts in this Soprano scenario. Yeah. I mean, that's who, you know, he's Fred's ride or die, and I feel like that's a more fair statement. And yeah, I don't know. Anyways, this has been Yabba Gabba Ghoul, the Sopranos Flintstones podcast. So we've got them almost hooking up and Tony going back into therapy. And we have this great scene.
What's the town from the Flintstones again?
Bedrock.
Yeah, Bedrock, New Jersey. That's got to be a place.
It's definitely a place. A fucking half of New Jersey is just a bunch of Flintstones references. But I have a clip of the Tony Melfi scene.
My nephew's fiance. I know what you're thinking. Well, nothing happened. But it could have very easily. What?
This is a very big step.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Tell me about the niece.
She's drop dead gorgeous. I could do it right this time. I could start a whole new family.
This is something you're contemplating?
What? It'd be a disaster of major proportions. Carmela, I'd get hosed financially. There'd be no reasoning with her after that. And my nephew, it would kill him. After years of growth.
It's a very telling moment that the first consequence he thinks about of fucking his nephew's fiance is that he might lose money in
right,
his divorce.
The financial disaster. Yeah. Just not a good time to fuck my nephew's fiance.
Taxes.
That'd be very bad for the girl. She doesn't deserve that.
It would be like committing an act of symbolic incest.
Whatever.
She could make a play for you. You might want to think about how you're going to establish limits and boundaries. For example, you could tell her she means a great deal to you, but you think of her as a daughter.
Even if I want to fuck her brains out.
This is a milestone for you. You're at a very important crossroads. For once, you want to avoid doing something you know is wrong and would be destructive both to yourself and to the people you care about. That's growth. That's progress. Not long ago, you stood in my outer office. I recall you used the words drop dead gorgeous about me and how you had to have me. I said I wouldn't date you, and look, you survived.
Like, and this is great, and it's the reason that I like the scenes in this, because it's not really about psychotherapy. Like, Tony's just going there to brag about doing something good and the fact that he could fuck this young girl. And and it's clearly he's not growing at all. But Melfi is there, and she's interpreting it as growth, because it flatters her as a psychiatrist. And then she like goes a step further to basically do the exact thing that Tony was doing, where she was like, "Yeah, I could have fucked my patient, and I didn't because I'm so smart."
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is also her being like, "Look what a good job I am. I'm doing as a psychiatrist. Yeah. I'm incredible at my job.
Not only am I good at psychiatry, I am also very fuckable." And that's the takeaway from this, is what she's saying.
Right. And also, like, again, she is confused as to what her role is in Tony's life, you know, and it's like, I can't blame her for being confused and wanting to think like, look at how the therapy is helping. But it's like, nah, like at every single moment where she's like, "Oh, just don't do it. That's great that you came here to, you know, to get my, you know, thoughts on this. Don't do it." And he's just like, "I don't know. I'm pretty much going to do it." And like, the role that you serve, Melfi, is that he's going to go in there and try to absolve himself from the future crimes that he's going to do. There is part of him that doesn't want to hook up with Adriana and knows it would be a disaster. But he also would really appreciate kind of a go ahead from Melfi. And like, so he goes there kind of you know, hoping for, at the very least, to rationalize it and talk about it out loud.
Well, I think what it is,
he has no one to talk to about it, right? Because everyone in his family knows.
I think there's actually like a name for this psychological phenomenon where, like, you think about doing something good without actually doing it because once you've already thought about yourself doing the good thing, like, you've already gotten
the dopamine,
the dopamine hit from knowing that you're a good person, and now you can just do whatever the fuck. And I've done that. Like, have you ever thought, like, you know, something bad happens to like an acquaintance and you're like, oh man, I should really send a card. And then you think that like three or four times without actually doing it. Like, I've done that a bunch of times.
You ride on the high of thinking about giving someone a card for a week. Yes. You're just like, man, I'm good.
With working out all the time. Like the night before, I'm like, I'm going to go to the gym tomorrow. And then at that point, I'm like, worked out, I'm good to go.
Yeah, you're like at a restaurant. You're like, oh man, I should really order the salad and be really good right now. And you're like, yeah, you should do that. And then the thought goes away and you fucking order the steak anyway.
Yeah. And you're just like, oh, let me get an extra slice or whatever the fuck.
And your brain's like, yeah, remember that time when you almost ordered the salad? That you're such a good person.
Yeah, I thought about not getting a second slice, but you know what? How often do I have to cross a prime rib?
That's right.
Yeah, so I mean, he's clearly he's coming there kind of like just to kind of work it out with her, but she's, you know, she's giving him the right advice. She's basically like, don't do it, it's fucking stupid. And of course, cut to the next scene. You know, Aide is fucking back with hanging out with Tony, having an awkward conversation at the Crazy Horse that turns into a conversation about, like, you know, it would be fun to get some coke.
Yeah,
and
that's definitely what two people who aren't going to fuck do.
Yeah.
I actually had this debate last night with somebody. Is it necessarily implied that you're going to fuck if you and somebody of the opposite sex are locked in a room together, mind you, the door's locked,
right?
And then somebody kind of puts the feeler out there, let's get coke, and the other person says, yeah, let's do it, and then you go into a car and drive it into a different state. Is there can you platonically do something like that? Because I think that you can.
I think you absolutely can. I think the possibility that you can is certainly there. But
it depends on,
I don't think
it depends
likely,
on,
but I think it's, you know, it's like, well, 80-20, let's say.
Mm-hmm. I disagree with that, actually. I think it all depends on the experience.
You fucking drug addict.
Yeah, so it depends on the experience of the user. As someone who, by the way, just celebrated 12 years clean, so suck my dick, Vince. Thank you for your claps.
Those were genuine. I know people can't tell when I'm being genuine.
No, those were, he was like crying and stuff. As someone who has had a lot of experience with cocaine, I think if the two users are experienced in cocaine, there's absolutely a huge percent chance that they're actually just trying to get some coke. Because the truth of it is, if you've done cocaine before, sex is not easy on cocaine. Like, sex is not, it feels like a horny drug, but it, you know, it makes it hard to get hard. It's not actually, like, I've tried to have sex on cocaine one time, and it's difficult. It's not necessarily a fuck drug, at least if you use it to the extent that I used it. And I mean, I pretty much just did drugs for the love of the game, not for the fucking. Sure. So
I wouldn't know I've never done drugs or had sex, so.
You've never done either, because you know, you're a good little boy.
I'm married to the Sopranos.
So you would think that this would be exonerating to Christopher as an experienced drug user. He would be like, okay, I'm glad that you were going to get cocaine with my boss.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It means you definitely weren't going to go fuck. And,
well, I think what's good about this episode is partly that he realizes that it doesn't matter. Like, Christopher realizes that it doesn't really matter whether they fucked or not, because it's not even really about the jealousy. It's about, like, seeing the pity in the eyes of your peers, which I kind of understood him, not to the point of like beating her up, obviously, but like but yeah, it would suck. Like, you are married to this gossip circle in the mafia, and there's very little that you can do about that. And if you can't control the gossip, like, your life is pretty much gone to shit.
Especially if the gossip is you're a cuck. That's like, that super sucks.
Yeah.
You know?
Even
it shows, I think, what not just Christopher, but almost everybody else in the show, how they think of relationships with women. They think of it just like, what will the fellas think about my girl?
Right.
Exactly. You know,
like, they don't actually like spending time with their girlfriends. When their penis is not actively making contact with their vagina, they right. don't want to be hanging out with their wives or their girlfriends.
Right.
And everything else besides that is just like them being annoyed around them. And then yes. when they're around their friends, they just want to be like, look how hot my girl is. Isn't that yeah. great? You guys love me?
And the yeah. other, yeah, the other level of that is like, Christopher is the character in the show who has like actually married like for love, like compared to the other characters, he is the one that's actually in like a sort of love relationship. And yet mm-hmm. he is also like a caricature of a piece of shit boyfriend. Like he does all of the wrong things and treats her like absolute shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he doesn't cheat.
Well, I guess he doesn't.
No.
Does he not cheat?
I don't think so. I think he's the only character on the show yeah, who does not you never cheat.
You never see him with a Gumar. That is true. Yeah. Well, you know, he's a complicated man.
Because he's actually in love, but he's only in love with the idea of Aide as a person who like doesn't talk or have her
his
own
favorite
or
parts.
Feelings.
Yeah, his favorite parts of Aide are when he gets to fuck. And then when he gets to like explain stuff to her about how he's a soldier,
yeah.
you know,
how the mafia like and the movie industry works.
Right. Exactly. When he's just like, you know, this is what a gaffer is. I know a thing or two. Or he goes like, I'm a soldier. You know, like he likes the way that Aide looks at him as a gangster. But then whenever she talks, he's just like, oh, my God, shut up. I don't care. Like, it's never seen a more impatient man. So yeah, they get into a car accident on the way to pick up the cocaine. While they're in the car, I really did love when Tony was just like, you know, you should hook me up with that friend Danielle of yours, who was like the undercover FBI agent.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she's just like, oh no, she's dead. Yeah, she drowned at a picnic. That it was quick thinking.
She fell right into the picnic basket and died. It was very weird.
it was good thinking. I mean, you know, she thought quickly. So yeah, they get into this car accident, and then we cut to them being in the hospital, and then we're introduced to this character. It is another famous moment of the Sopranos trying to write black people characters.
I was going to say, this is like a fresh new twist on the Sopranos not really being able to write black characters very well.
Yeah, yeah. So we're introduced to offended doctor.
Yeah.
Who
hot
is...
Hot young offended doctor.
Hot young offended doctor. And this is like, there's like only a few black characters that they write in the Sopranos, and sometimes they're like surprisingly smart rapper, and then sometimes they're it's like you know, goofball gangster clown, and then this one is kind of in the, I would say, the same vein as like Meadows' ex, Noah, mm-hmm. Noah Tenenbaum, like kind of like hot, intellectual, you know, professional offended person, which is
yeah,
is
like
offensive
you
in and of itself.
Yeah, like watching this guy, you wonder if like the script notes said uppity somewhere in them.
Yeah, right, straight up. It is it's super ridiculous the way that this character is written, and I have a clip.
Viewed your chart and ruled out internal injuries, so you're free to go. I'll have the nurse process your discharge orders.
Whoa. This was a very bad accident. I mean, are you sure you did all the tests? I can afford it.
I did the appropriate tests. I hold a medical degree from Johns Hopkins. My grandmother was the first black woman licensed to practice medicine in Delaware.
All right, take it easy.
These blacks. Who knows where they're going to take the wrong way?
You know?
I feel like they could have softened this guy and made him slightly more fleshed out as a character. Like, he works in the show, but yeah, like... I always hate it in shows when like a bad person offers someone money and they're like, ugh, I would never. Like in
yeah,
my
right.
life, if someone offered me money, I'm like, cool. Like whatever this money was going to do, Has now become good because I have taken into my possession.
Right.
And Tony's line of like, you know, for the kids.
Yeah.
Like they just like every hospital has just like a room of children that are laying on cots. Yeah. $20 in the next 30 minutes they can't eat.
Right. Yeah. He's like, it's for the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
You know the ones limping around, they got the little tube in the nose, those kids, give them the money.
Yeah. Hey, take the money.
This kid that has terminal cancer, here, this might brighten his day. Give him $200.
Yeah.
You know what I need? Like, this kid looks like he needs a Gumad.
Yeah. Hey, take this money and buy yourself a Patch Adams.
It's get a bunch of red noses to wear. the one thing I kind of wish they had done, because you're right, I don't think that they would have written, if the doctor was white, the character, I think, would not have worked in the same way, because anytime they encounter like an intellectual that stands up for themselves,
right,
the answer is usually just like hit them over the head with a frying pan
and
just
beat
the shit out of this guy. But it's very clearly them trying to like shoehorn a character in there because they've heard the criticism of the show.
Yes.
Okay. Well, they'll respect this man.
Right.
Yeah. And they write him in such a way that's not realistic, because it's like, yeah, I think he would be scared if he had to be in a car with mobsters who just like threatened to break his kneecaps and shoot him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also like, yeah, there is that kind of running thing of like in The Sopranos, there are certain intellectuals who don't express any fear of the mafia, because they're just kind of like, they're businessmen, I'm a businessman, we can work it out. So like him kind of not really expressing any fear about the whole situation is kind of strange.
The guy at the beginning of Die Hard, where he's like, yes, I'm gonna negotiate with this guy.
Yes, exactly. There's always Hunt, that character in The Bubby, Sopranos.
I'm your white knight.
but just for this scene in particular, I did feel like they really didn't write Tony saying anything presumptuous or offensive or anything, and they just kind of made the doctor offended, which I was like, oh, this is so, why do they do this? Like, just make it a normal character. Anyways, Tony then goes to Adriana and says, hey, we got to fucking, you know, we're going to have to get our story straight here. Meanwhile, Chris hears about all of this from a couple of fat dudes that he's giving cigarettes to. And it kind of like immediately covers it up. Like, oh, yeah, that's right. She has an aunt in Dover who's sick, who knows Tony's aunt, when it's clear that he's like, what the fuck just happened? And then we've got Tony, you know, giving his denial. In the scene where he denies what's going on to Chrissy, he starts off picking off dog shit from his shoe.
Yeah.
And is like, hey, could you pop that in that trash can over there? Which is, you got to hand it to Tony for always knowing the most alpha thing to do in every moment.
Yeah.
Like he just knows how to do that shit.
I like when Christopher found out about the accident, it actually, you could see like a little glimpse into his psyche, because his first reaction wasn't jealousy. Maybe he's just too dumb and didn't think of that.
Initially. Right.
His initial reaction was, oh my God, is Tony okay?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
About his boss, because like, you know, obviously Tony's family. So there is like a little bit of good buried deep down inside Christopher.
Just,
I don't know. It shows itself in weird ways sometimes.
Yeah, he does. Like, I think he does like legitimately care about Tony. So he was worried about like, oh fuck, is he okay? Also, there's probably part of him that's like, you know, knows that if Tony dies, his fucking ride is over. Because the only reason he's gained fucking so much clout in the mafia is because he's the nephew of the fucking boss. But then it's once he realizes, you know, the details surrounding it, he starts getting paranoid as to, oh, fuck, did they hook up? And then the game of telephone kind of starts.
Went without a scratch. But Adriana suffered a severe blow to the head.
Adriana got caught giving a big guy a blowjob.
And when the paramedics found him, she had his cock still in her mouth.
Now, statistics show that most single car fatalities are the result of guys popping their load behind the wheel.
Apparently, he came all over the sun visor.
San Severino. Guess who went down on Tony Soprano?
That's the truth. It's fact.
It was my old lady. The next thing she sucked is a tailpipe.
That pretty little shrimp sucked this pipe
anytime she wants.
Like you'd ever have a shot.
Hey, let me tell you something. When Christopher was in rehab, she was calling me all the time. I was this close.
Then you got a problem, because your barjol isn't even that long.
What's so funny?
Nothing.
Didn't sound like nothing. I want to hear the big joke.
Take it easy. We're just shooting the shit.
We were just talking about my barjol.
Oh, yeah? What about it?
So, Adrian, huh?
I asked him a fucking question.
What are you breaking my balls for?
I want a fucking answer. What's so fucking hilarious, you fucking parade float?
Oh, I'm a fucking captain now. You don't talk to me like that.
Oh, come on, guys.
Don't put your hands on me.
Chrissy, for Christ's sake.
Fuck all of you.
He throws food right at Vito, which that's got to be resolved later, which I love.
He threw a sandwich at me, not for nothing.
Not for nothing. You threw a sandwich at me. That's
I also
gotta
like
be
that,
fucking resolved.
That Hesh is the Cliff Clavin of that sequence. Where he's like, yeah, it's a little known fact that, 50% of car crashes are because.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's usually something that Pauly would do, is like interject with a crazy statistic that he just read in like People magazine in the
right.
Room, you know? And now he's an expert. I also like how Christopher, just jumping back a little bit, but
yeah.
He gets better at being in the mafia when he's sober. Like he's
yeah.
His teams start bringing in more money when he's thinking clearly. And he's advancing in the crime family now that he's like no longer drinking. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's got this, whatever the cigarette scan that he's running seems like pretty well organized. I mean, he's got a fucking Thomas Guide map in front of him. Like, this guy is, he's thinking clearly with his head straight. Unfortunately, his, fucking fiance might have fucked Tony Soprano. I really enjoy watching him, kind of assuming that everyone's laughing at him and being correct. You know, it's like there's this kind of like general idea of like, oh, man, he's probably just being paranoid and whatnot. I think in any other situation where, you know, the rumor mill is going, I don't know, I would assume that everyone's got their own problems and leading their own life. But in this case, literally everyone is just calling him a cuck behind his back. And it leads to him fucking having one of the most brutal scenes in The Sopranos that doesn't end in anyone getting killed, which is a scene between him and Adriana. And I believe actually both Adriana, the actress who plays Adriana, and Chris, they both won Emmys for this episode. Probably because of this next scene.
Hey, hon. I already ate. There's a casserole in my...
You fucking lying bitch!
Ow! Stop it! What are you doing?
You were sucking his cock! Georgie told me everything. The sergeant on the operating table said you were moaning Tony's name.
See, again, like even in the middle of that, like they have extended the sitcom game of telephone into like yes. A scene of domestic violence.
Yeah. Like the idea that he is fucking like the rumor has gone so ridiculously far that he thinks it's plausible that she'd be on the operating table moaning a name. Like,
also,
like
she didn't have surgery, did she? She was just like in the hospital.
No.
Yeah, there was no surgery.
And just like, what do you think was like, as if it's plausible that she's like in some sort of like surgical situation, she's in a coma, but she's still fucking in the dream world. Like, like, yeah. And he's blinded by his rage, and he's not very smart. So
well, yeah.
Yeah,
and I think like the writers, like on a meta level, are doing well. They're doing two things. Like on a minor level, they're giving us they're giving themselves license to make Georgie only exist as a punching bag, because up until now, Georgie is just like this gentle Lenny from Of Mice and Men who shows up
right.
Like every four episodes to get like hit with a telephone or
to fuck up at the Bing somehow and just be like, oh, I just the ice is melting, I'm putting in new ice, and just get his ass kicked.
Yeah, I don't know how to use the telephone. And then here, like he actually does a bad thing by perpetuating this rumor. And then like it's also setting the stage for Chrissy to get whacked, because like this whole episode basically exists to be like, yep, he's crossed the line and he's thoroughly irredeemable at this point.
Yeah, yeah, and he almost fucking gets killed over it. You know, he goes to the fucking Bing, shoots up the car, brings his gun into the Bing, which he's already like emptied the whole fucking, you know, clip, and he's just waving it around. What I love about that scene is that you've got like Syl using a bullhorn and just being like, just telling people like, everybody calm down.
Just, yeah, it's like it on is... The Simpsons, was that the everything is fine alarm going off?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I was still walking down the stairs like, nothing to see here. No, I'm just being the bullhorn, calming everybody down. It's a disgruntled customer.
Yes. Yeah.
I also, and it's fitting that we brought PFT on because I believe this is like the first appearance of Tony Siragusa as one of the goons.
That's right. A legendary performance. I mean, they saw his acting job in the 25th hour and they're like, uh-huh. this guy looks good. He can fill out a jumpsuit. So let's get him involved.
I mean, he definitely is like the perfect mafia goon because like when he was playing football, he was like one of the few football players whose head somehow looks bigger when there's not a helmet on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually think that he was just in the mafia the whole time, and like maybe the owner of the Ravens owed him a favor and put him on the lineup. Like he does not look like an athlete.
No,
he is 350, 360 pounds, and like he appears to be 5'7". I think it's just like this was his demand. This was a make good in the mafia.
Well, you know that he was a place kicker on his high school football team, right?
Shut up.
Yeah, for real.
I gotta get my hands on that film. I love it when occasionally I'll see a picture pop up on the timeline of the goose back on the sidelines and he's wearing like a fur coat. It actually looks like the fur coat from Goodfellas that they got in trouble for wearing after the LaFonza raid. And he's just rocking that in the end zone. It's like a 70 degree day, but when you're the goose, sometimes you gotta stunt on the haters.
He was a New Jersey State wrestling champion with a 97-1 career record. In football, he played defensive line, punted, and place kicked. He had a 39-yard punting average and was 15 of 18 on extra point attempts.
That's remarkable.
Yeah.
That's I got to see his pass, punt, and kick picture, like the old Andy Reid one. He's like four times the size of that poor little 10-year-old. I bet Goose would dwarf Andy Reid even in that one.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Tony kicks him out and takes him out to get, you know, nearly executed. And then we've got fucking Tony B kind of playing, you know, Deus Ex Machina. I mean, he's like,
once again, proving himself to be like the most competent mobster, like the way he effortlessly threatened the doctor earlier, after, and then also, you know, talks Tony out of shooting Chrissy in the head in that moment.
Right.
Although I'm not sure that was a good mafia decision. I think everyone would probably agree that Tony like lost face by not shooting Christopher in that field.
Yeah, maybe. Because,
like, the reason that he had for shooting Christopher in the head, like, you would think that the guy that is getting cucked would be the one mad enough to kill the other guy. But in this circumstance, it's like, man, Tony's really losing his fastball. He cucked another guy's wife and then didn't finish the job and kill the guy afterwards.
Yeah.
and then Chris is at some point drops just a great insult on him. He says, you're a coos hound. And that's one that I just found in my back pocket for later. That's no other reason than just to point out that that's a world-class insult.
Yeah. And you'd fuck a catcher's mitt, which is, I mean, you know, that is, I feel like that's not fair as an insult because sometimes you fuck inanimate objects to stop yourself from making a terrible mistake. I think we've all been there. I think we can all admit it. I'd like you guys to admit quick that we've all fucked inanimate.
It's leather. We get it.
Mm-hmm.
I've always said that the catcher's mitt is the second sexiest baseball glove behind the first baseman's mitt.
Oh, sure.
But it's still ahead of the infield and well ahead of the outfield with the giant webbing.
Yeah. It's the most labial.
Yes.
Fair. So, yeah, then we've got the return of the perpetually offended doctor. And that is it's a great scene in which Tony B kind of like channels Dr. House a little bit, ends up being kind of like a secret medical genius. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. I have a clip of that.
This gentleman here is the fiance of the young lady that I was with. Now, he's got it into his head that there was all the sex going on at the time at a wreck.
Listen,
Hey, just a sec. And naturally, he's very upset. So I need you to tell him there wasn't.
He's obviously feeling the pressure. He's just gonna fucking lie.
I'm not in the custom of lying about anything.
These blacks.
But whether somebody was getting something in the car, how could I possibly attest to that?
Well, as the attending, you could explain how medically it's not possible.
Excuse me?
Well, for instance, if she was wearing a seatbelt, then there would have been abrasions to the lateral anterior aspect of the clavicle, wouldn't there? Or the right mid-sternum?
Are you a physician?
No, I'm a pre-board certified massage therapist.
I don't know how that really convinces Chris, in my opinion.
I'd like to put on record that I do not give any doctor permission to tell anyone for any circumstance that I was not getting my dick sucked at the time of whatever accident that I was in. That's a HIPAA violation.
Yeah. I mean, I would like it to be assumed that in any accident I'm in, it's because I was getting my dick sucked at the time. Yeah. I mean, it would be, I think it's a violation of medical privacy to not assume I was getting my dick sucked. But this works on Chris. And, you know, but Chris, I think, Vince, you said before, he realizes that it doesn't really fucking matter. What matters is what everyone thinks is going on at the time. And he's the only way that he can save face. It's all go out to Vesuvio together. And for everyone in the mafia who I assume is always eating at Vesuvio at all times.
See, my impression was that they did that on purpose somehow. Because how are you going to do that unless you had already just cleared the whole restaurant for only the mafia that night?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe he was just like waiting, you know, he's finding out like, hey, Vito, you going to go to Vesuvio sometime soon? You know, just like waiting for that, because very specifically, he needed to make restitution also to Vito for throwing the food at him. Mm-hmm. But I just assume that there's like a Friday night or a Saturday night. Everyone is like, that's Vesuvio night. We go to Artie's restaurant and eat the same red sauce we've been eating for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of bars will have like Monday night is service industry night where, you know, people from surrounding bars, restaurants go there and it's just understood that they're in the business. It's like mafia night at Vesuvio's.
It's waste management night. It is it is like a funny comment on Jersey that they literally only eat the same 12 Italian dishes all the time. Like, oh man, I can't wait to go home and Aid's going to cook me a carbonara. And it's like, God damn you fuckers. When do you not eat gabagool?
I mean, if you found the best food.
It's one of the most delicious looking television snacks when Tony goes into the fridge and just starts eating cold cuts off the paper.
Absolutely.
Like that, and the way that The Simpsons made beer look,
are
delicious television food items.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, I as someone who does do a midday snack of various cold cuts, like I will say, doing that every day seems like such a recipe for heart problems that it's always surprising to me that. Like, I'm not surprised James Gandolfini is dead. I'm surprised everyone else is still alive.
Right,
you know what
right.
I mean? Like, the fact that Bobby Bacala is alive and well is like, that's like a miracle of modern medical science. That's neither here nor there. Everyone goes out to eat. Everyone kind of like kisses and makes up. And it kind of fades out and we just kind of move on. I think one of the ending scenes that I like the most is Aid meeting up with the FBI, and San Severino, the FBI agent, is like looking at her face, is all like fucked up and stuff like that. And she's like, most of this is from the accident. And, in order to try to convince Adriana to like snitch more on Tony, she just goes, it's a syndrome, protecting abusers. And there's like something about the way that the FBI has kind of like positioned themselves as like the liberal good guys.
Yeah. She's very much like the scoldy liberal in this story.
Yes. Yeah. She's just like, you know, there's a lot of reasons why Tony is bad, but one of the big reasons is that he's very problematic. You know, like that's
honestly,
the feeling.
Toxic.
Yeah, he's displaying toxic masculinity. We're actually doing a wiretap mostly to find the different instances of toxic masculinity. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the I just hate the way, or I love the way the FBI positions themselves as the good guy in this by appealing to liberal values. Vince, do you have a favorite, least favorite scene?
Yeah, we didn't get to talk about this, but first of all, Tony and Carmela have that amazing fight, which is amazing on so many levels, and it ends with her dropping the pizza and Tony storms out. And then in that moment, I was like, oh, come on, there's no way this fat Italian guy is gonna leave like a perfectly good pizza sitting on the floor like that. And uh-huh. like clockwork, he comes back in, picks up the pizza, and he's like, yeah, I'm taking my fucking pizza with me. Yeah, I thought that was perfect.
What about you, PFT? Do you have a favorite scene or a least favorite scene in this?
I liked when Chrissy was meeting with the guys with the van filled with goods, and he was like offended. He's like, no one's gonna know what to do with this stuff. What is this fancy mumbo jumbo? And it was like a pressure cooker and like a toaster. He was like, get this shit out of this fancy shit out of here. And then he comes back with cigarettes. He's like, now this is the real score. What people under. My people know what they want. It's not kitchen appliances.
They don't know how to use a fucking instant pot. They do know how to smoke some cigarettes. Yeah. Yeah, I would say, you know, fucking if I had to rate this episode with like any, you know, grade, I would say a solid B+. Vince, what would you give this episode?
Ooh, it's a tough one. Like we said, you know, this is a very streamlined, linear episode of The Sopranos, sort of a departure, but in a way that really works. And if I had to give it a review, I think if I had to give it a grade, I think solid B+, definitely.
All right, cool. So that was a surprise. PFT, what would you rate this episode? What letter grade?
So I had this one. It's a great episode. It's very, very good. I think people who are diehard fans of The Sopranos will absolutely love it. Mm-hmm. And if you're a casual fan, there are enough scenes to make you feel like it's a valuable use of your time and you'll really enjoy it as well. But I think it does appeal a little bit more to those that have been following it for a while. So for that reason, I give it just short of an A. I'm going to give it a B+.
Fair. Mm. All right. That is a good...
But fair.
Tough but fair. Yeah, B+ episode of The Sopranos and A+ episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. PFT, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people find you on the internet?
Check me out at PFT Commenter on Twitter. Mm. And then actually, no, I changed my hand. It's at Lenny Dykstra. Make sure to follow at Lenny Dykstra. That's my new account that I've got. Uh-huh. I was hanging outside the Federal Reserve this morning in New York City trying to get my money back. So tune in and set tweet notifications. And I'm sure once I get my money from the Federal Reserve, I'll instruct you guys how to do the exact same.
Hell yeah.
Fair enough. Follow at Lenny Dykstra on Twitter immediately. Do not follow PFT. His old account. That's done. He's done with that. And listen to Pardon My Take wherever you get fucking podcasts. Patreon.com/Fraudcast for all of the bonus episodes of the Film Drunk Fraudcast, where Vince and I talk about things other than The Sopranos. We talk about movies. We talk about other TV shows. And this week, we have some new Pod Yourself a Shout Out patrons, Vince.
Oh, do we? I can't wait.
Are you ready?
I got to loosen up to give some nicknames. Okay.
All right. Let's do this shit. First, we got James Lazor.
Lazor? Laser or Lazor? I thought it was...
L-A-Z-O-R.
Okay. Well, we'll call it... That's the lazy boy. Hey, we call this guy the recliner. You know, he's always kicking back. He's always throwing kickers.
The recliner. James the recliner Lazor. And then we have Russell Strandberg.
Whew, that's a tough
one. Yeah, good luck. Try to make a mafia name out of a Strandberg.
Strandberg, you know, he's like stand and deliver. We call this guy Almost.
Okay. All right.
He was in Stand and Deliver, I think.
Yeah, I gotcha. No, he was. and then we have Anthony Fox.
What's his first name?
Anthony.
About Anthony, this guy Fox.
Oh, I like it. That. This guy. We call him this guy because this guy Fox. Very good.
Or Guy Fawkes, like he's got the V for Vendetta.
It works.
Yeah,
it works on
a lot of levels.
That's a lot of levels.
I'm just stopping by.
Two more. We got Bob Dabolina.
Oh, Dabolina. We call him the Dabbler. He's always such a dilettante, this guy.
Bob the Dilettante Dabbler Dabolina. A very, like it. Very good. And finally, Chris Dean.
Chris Dean, you know, we call him Bananarama based on the way we did that last guy's nickname. Yeah.
I don't remember. Why? Why do you call him Bananarama?
Because, I don't know, dude.
All right. Chris Bananarama Dean.
You can't explain every nickname sometimes.
You don't have to.
That guy's name is Snot Boogie. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah,
that's his name.
That's the Snot Boogie of this crew of $8 plus patrons. These are actually all $20 patrons. Woo. That means that these people were signing up for more than just a nickname, and that will happen. We are going to be starting up the Mystery Frauding Theater, where we're going to do a fucking live commentary on movies once a month at $20. We're going to start doing that on fucking Discord. So fucking, you know, get on the Discord and just talk to us. Send us memes and shit. Frotcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
I think we're about due for another listener mail episode. We got a lot of voicemails. For future voicemails, 415-275-0030.
All right, everybody. Thank you again so much for listening. And until next time, don't stop believing.
All up in that ass with that gat. Trying to suck some dick, trying to eat some butts, trying to fuck some nuts, trying to bust my shit and fuck a bitch until we have sex. Eating shit is fun, bitch. I got a gun.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.